Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
My brand new book, Midwife Pip's Guide to a Positive Birth, is now available. So much more than a book, this is a guide that allows me to hold your hand through your birth preparation journey. With over a decade of experience and knowledge packed in to ensure you really are empowered in the way you deserve to achieve a positive birth, regardless of the twists and turns that crop up. Make sure that you get your hands on Midwife Pip's Guide to a Positive Birth book now and are empowered to have the birth experience that you deserve. Hello, I'm Pip and welcome to the Midwife Pip podcast, the home of expert information and real chats on all things pregnancy, birth and beyond. Remember, as a podcast listener, you can get 15% off my online courses at midwifepip.com using the code PODCAST15. If you've had or known anyone who has had a baby, you will be sure to have heard the term colic at some point. It is seemingly super common, but yet no one really seems to know the best way to manage it, or even better, to prevent it ever happening in the first place. This week's guest is Philippa Murphy. With an impressive amount of expertise and qualifications within the health and development of children for over 30 years, Philippa is a very keen advocate for natural preventative and remedial treatments for our newborns and the ideal avoidance of a medical pathway for them. And I'm really looking forward to joining you all in learning so much about the cause of colic and management from Philippa today. So welcome, Philippa, and thank you for coming on to join me, despite the time zone difference that we are very cleverly navigating.
We are cleverly navigating that, Pip, I agree. No, you're most welcome. Thanks for having me. I'm really looking forward to today and providing and sharing some more information for your listeners. So yeah, thanks for having me.
I'm so excited to pick your brain. So I'm going to jump straight in, Philippa, because I want to ask you so much. One of the first things that crops up, I think, when we hear the term colic is often there's different terms. And I wonder if you could clarify if there are any differences and what they may be between the terms colic and reflux. I feel it's all a little bit grey and confusing, and I don't really understand myself.
Yeah, it's so true. The internet's rife with so many things, it can be hard to navigate. So if we talk about it from the perspective of what most parents are told, rather than from the perspective of what I teach, then largely currently today, most professionals, health professionals would tell a parent that the cause of colic is unknown. Excuse me. That you simply have to wait until your baby grows out of it at 3 months of age. Apparently there's this magical, miraculous number. And the description that is still used today to define colic is, and I actually believe this is truly outdated because it was done in 1954. It's held up. You know, great research at its time, Dr. Morris Wiesel. However, we have changed so many things, you know. The information needs to change, diets change, medications have changed, but that definition is really that colic is when a baby cries for at least 3 hours per day, at least 3 days per week, for at least 3 weeks. Now, I know that that's not the case for so many babies that have colic as it's known. But parents will also get told that there's numerous contributing factors, which is one of the aspects I really do agree with. It's like a jigsaw puzzle for each baby. While they all have a foundational cause for colic, you know, that's all based on the digestive biology being pushed beyond what it can cope with, it's caused by many different factors. And then, so that kind of defines colic, but when we talk about in terms of reflux, I think what's really important for the listeners today, Pip, is to just have a differentiation between what it is we're talking about. So there's two things. There's gastroesophageal reflux. So depending on what hemisphere you're in, that can be shortened to GER or GOR, G-E-R or G-O-R. Or there's gastroesophageal reflux disease. So GERD or GORD. Mm-hmm. Now, there is so much confusion on the internet about these two. And you'd think that gastroesophageal reflux disease was rife in our world. However, it's actually quite rare. So I've only had in my 30-year career two babies that I've referred to in the medical pathway, because most of our babies are experiencing gastroesophageal reflux. So, and that can be healed naturally, you know, which is fabulous news.
Really
it can
reassuring.
Also be prevented, you know, it can be prevented, which is just incredible. So when to differentiate, how does a mum tell the difference, a mum and dad tell the difference between, well, is it gastroesophageal reflux disease, or are we just, not just, sorry, because that's certainly not a just with everything that parents go through, or is it gastroesophageal reflux? And the one major difference is that a baby with gastroesophageal reflux disease will bring up the majority of their milk, whether breast or bottle fed, after every feed. And they will, the biggest thing is failure to thrive. So we're talking about weight gain, okay? And then if it's ongoing, then that may have other ongoing effects as well. Whereas with gastroesophageal reflux, which is what I heal, the baby may still reflux after a feed, and actually refluxing is quite natural and normal to a certain level. They may even bring up big posits, but they're still maintaining weight gain. Not always the case. So some children can still have gastroesophageal reflux and not be gaining, but it's not a medical pathway. They still don't have gastroesophageal reflux disease. So it really is about coming back to the basics for each child and defining, you know, all those causes to define that, if that makes sense. I hope I haven't lost anyone within that. But with if we're just talking about gastroesophageal reflux disease, so parents will largely get told that the majority of symptoms happen because acid is moving up the esophagus, and the baby's showing the discomfort from that acid, and that this happens because our babies are born with an immature digestive system. Yeah. Now, that's an aspect I don't agree with. I think it's an aspect of lack that we need to rise our perception on and actually see our children born with everything they require, unless medically complicated, and come from that point, that perspective. So, but largely parents are told that this immaturity then has a sphincter muscle at the bottom of the esophagus, allowing the acid to travel upward and burn that esophagus. So it's a hugely taught belief, marketed belief, and most of these babies will end up going down a pathway, a lot of them do, for acid inhibitors, you know, under the guise that it's the recovery pathway that's available to them. And in actual fact, acid in immature digestive system, a weak sphincter muscle, is not the cause of reflux or silent reflux, gastroesophageal reflux. And I know that because I'm healing it. So if it was, we just couldn't heal it, you know. So those kind of define the two and what's widely known out there.
So interesting, Philippa. I love that you come at this from a really unique angle. What has led you to defining the terms colic and reflux so differently? And what would parents be seeing in terms of symptoms that they may then come to you for support with?
Another day is here and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America N.A., member FDIC.
So if we just, with what led me there, desperation. To be
off
honest,
of the way, isn't I was it? It's off in the way.
Oh, desperation. I was working 24 hours a day, 6 days a week, with specializing with newborn twins as a maternity nurse. So for those of you that don't know, that means you live in the parent's house from the moment the babies are born, if not before. So sometimes I would help transition the twins out of the hospitals as well. And when I first started, you know, all the things that I was being told, which largely parents are still being told to help their babies, that will help their babies, are they just didn't seem to make the huge difference that we were looking for. And in some cases, they actually caused more symptoms. So I came across this out of desperation to stop the crying, the pain. I also came across this because during that time, I had the privilege of sitting on couches lots of times for hours on end, often, with two babies, hands on the stomach, feeling the digestive system, recognizing cues, seeing, oh, you do that. Oh, and little things, you know, incidences would happen. And I'd go and say, oh, you burp after that. Okay, what do you do? And from family to family, I then came about that this was a piece of their jigsaw puzzle. So we'll talk about this shortly, probably. But I could, at that point, with knowing how to distinguish air more in the body and how to release that air, I still couldn't heal colic and reflux, which by then had become quite a mission of mine, because I couldn't get that nature could get this so wrong. I just couldn't believe that we didn't have answers for this. It just didn't, it's just, you know, so I started looking and searching. So I define colic and reflux, silent reflux, lactose and dairy overload, the witching hour, so-called purple crying, even the awful term sleep regression, again, coming from that aspect of lack, which is often caused through teething symptoms. You know, your wee one would have gone through teething symptoms, I'm sure, Pip. Oh, yeah. Lovely time, isn't
Thankfully,
it?
Hopefully we've got a full set of teeth now.
Oh, really? Wow. That's fab. Good stuff. So yeah, form three teething and some cases of misdiagnosed cow's milk protein intolerances. So that's happening quite a bit, particularly in the UK. So I've defined those under the causal term that I've coined, called digestive overload, which is the cause of all of these symptoms. Now, the medical term for digestive overload in adults is indigestion. It's pretty simple. Or what the NHS and many other health bodies call, and professionals call, functional dyspepsia. Okay. And when we look at the symptoms of all three of these terms, digestive overload, indigestion, dyspepsia, then you can see that the symptoms really do start to kind of overlap. Do you want me to go through the symptoms on all of those, Pip, or just particularly the digestive overload? Symptoms.
Yeah, just some of the key ones that parents might kind of notice and think, oh my gosh, this isn't normal for my child. Some of these kind of key ones that you might see cropping up.
So certainly upper abdominal pain is described within all three aspects. But if we're just looking at digestive overload, you know, babies would experience a lot of hiccups. The number one sign. So that's them trying to release air, more of their air. They'll have irritability, grunting. A grunting baby can be in just as much pain as a baby that's screaming. They're just communicating it differently. Crying, frequent searching for something to suck. So they look like they're hungry and they're often getting fed because of that. And that's causing a digestive overload scenario. Bopping on and off the breast during feeding, gulping their milk, seeming hungry but not really hungry, refluxing, obviously, wheezy, congested, bloated and distended hard tummies. You know, if you look at your child and their chest is this wide but then their stomach comes out beyond that, then this is not normal. You know, there's a problem there that needs to be looked at. And can often be healed naturally, you know, it's certainly doable. And hernias can be a problem because the stomach muscles don't get a chance to knit with all the bloatedness and the crying. Excessive flatulence, constipation, short sleep cycles, 45-minute sleep cycles, actually not normal. our babies can sleep a lot better, a lot deeper when these symptoms don't exist. And even beside these symptoms, even if your child's not at that stage of digestive overload, when we nurture alongside their digestive capabilities, then sleep, they should be sleeping a lot, a lot longer than this 45-minute sleep cycle, which never used to exist when I started. It's something that's evolved over time as being the norm. But that's my opinion and through my clinical research. So those are the symptoms, arching backwards, not wanting to be laying down.
Parents know, don't they? They know when there's something that's just not quite right and their baby's kind of trying to communicate something, I think. It's our intuition is so powerful.
Oh, it is. And I think, that saying about intuition, Pip, you'll intuitively know. I think in a way, yes, that's fabulous. We do, honestly, but I also think intuition is birthed. We hold that up to that we instinctively know, and yet lots of parents feel really lost. I don't instinctively know. Please give me the education first.
Yeah.
And then I can build upon my intuition within that, within that ability to see my child intuitively.
Mm. One of the things I find really interesting, Philippa, is when you talk about the six wind cues.
It's a bit of a mouth twister.
Yeah, I know. Six wind cues. Can you tell us a little bit more about them, but also how you went to discover them? I know you mentioned there about your past looking after twins, which must have given you sort of perhaps a start into that. But yeah, reveal more if you can.
Yeah, sure. So this kind of sits under my pathways of healing. So I have two main pathways. One is coming from the perspective of the digestive system. So looking at digestive system and its functions, and then harmonizing our care practices within that. And then the second pathway that coincides with that is cue-led communication and response pathway. And that involves teaching parents how to not only recognize their full array of cues that their child is exhibiting, but also how to respond knowingly to those. And calming practices. I mean, we as parents, we hardly get taught how to calm our babies, and a few of the calming methods we're told actually create more issues. So when we're looking at the six wind cues, that's kind of the pathway they sit under. Again, yes, you're right. Coming back to, sitting on that couch and feeling those bodies is where I first discovered the six wind cues, stemming from a very traditional, long-standing, I don't even know where it came from, and to this day I still don't, called the windy stare. The windy smile. We all knew that wind caused the windy smile, and I was like, well, if it causes that, why not other cues? And so I started to see that, yes, there was a relationship between feeling that wind move in the tummy and then the baby's becoming absolutely calm all of a sudden, and they'd exhibit these six wind cues. And then through just incidences, I'd then release that wind and they wouldn't have that wind cue anymore. Or it got to a point where I'd release, three burps, four burps, and then the wind cue would disappear. And so over time, going from family to family, really working with this, it took me 2 years before I became confident that I wasn't going nutty and that I was seeing what I was seeing, because no one else was talking about it, I'd certainly never been taught it. And I'm the only one today that actually teaches it. And this is one of my aims, is to get this out here because it's so fundamental to health. So the six wind cues within themselves, I found that our babies have the windy stare, which all babies are. Most babies, would you agree, Pip? Most babies come out with that big wide-eyed, after the crying, etc., or however those initial stages happen, big eyes, big wide eyes looking at the world. So my belief there is that as they come through the birth canal, they actually come out into the world of breath. And whatever stress they're taking in big breaths, And so initially their tummy's quite full of gas, quite full of air. And so it causes that mechanism of the cue of the windy stare. Rolling, fluttering eyes is another, smiling, of course. The chewing motion with the tongue poking out, often thought of as a hunger cue. It's not, it's a wind cue. Around 8 weeks, 9 weeks, and this one's really short-lived, but controlled arm movements. So the very first controlled arm movements backwards and forwards that your baby will make. And then the most miraculous one to me, and I still, you know, blows my mind really, is that wind is the catalyst to going and garring. You know, it starts our language as a human race, and the wind comes up, it vibrates the vocal cords, and then, you know, once you've burped them, that no longer happens. And then slowly wind takes a back seat in that. Mm. So, yeah, the six wind cues, here I am not yeah, able to say it either. Maybe I should have chosen a different name. Yeah. But the six wind cues, they're really fundamental to like five physiological developments. And I'm working at trying to find a way to watch the brain development and the connections of neurons that go on when these cues are happening. Because they really develop vision, our vision, they develop jaw muscles and through the smiling, mastication through the chewing and poking out the tongue and learning how to use that mouth. And then of course, the first controlled arm movements and going and garring, you know, they're incredible and something I wish all parents knew about because, as I said, they're kind of fundamental to knowing how to look after your baby fully.
Yeah, no, it's so interesting, isn't it? And actually when you were talking then, I was kind of thinking back to newborn days with my son and actually those things you say, I'm like, oh yeah, he did that. And it's just really interesting because at the time, you know, totally overlooked the significance or what was potentially happening physiologically at that time to see those external changes. So it's really interesting.
Good.
And Philippa, you mentioned a bit about some of the healing that you do and sort of the staying away from medicine, especially as the first line kind of in treatment for these symptoms. Can you just summarize very briefly some of the work that you do with babies to help to overcome these symptoms for them?
Yes, definitely. So I would love to be more in the preventative sector, and I'm working towards that within my Baby Cues postnatal evolution campaigns. One of them's about, you know, teaching this in pregnancy. Remedial work that I do is worldwide, virtual, online. Anyone can have a consult with me. I've also got books that I sell, masterclasses, all on how to burp and also avoid colic, coming from that child's digestive development perspective. So parents that come to me are already, they already know something's wrong, or they're already in the depths of desperation and despair and mental ill health and sleep deprivation. I mean, it's a really awful place to be. I mean, it's estimated that 33 million newborns suffer with colic and 90 million suffer with reflux a year. Now, there'll be overlapping in those numbers, but that's a year, you know, and most of that, I would say personally, after what I do, is avoidable. I would, you know, we could certainly cut those numbers. So parents come to me, some will come where they're at the point where they're being offered acid inhibitors, which is the pathway for reflux. Things like Losec, Metprazole, Esomeprazole, and they don't want to give it. Others have already gone down that pathway. They'll be having that plus maybe milk thickener like Carabel or Gaviscon might be where they're at. And so they're already seeing the adverse effects from those happening. So I spend my days weaning babies through off those medications while also looking at natural remedies too, because some of these natural remedies on the market are causing ill effects as well. And it's one of the changes that I really would love to see happen, and I'm going to be proactive about myself, is just looking at, yeah, some of the adverse effects are terrible within those. So I spend my day stripping back all of those possible causes while looking at what got the parents there at the first place, making sure is baby hungry or are they digestively overloaded, because those symptoms are similar. I teach parents, I work with breastfeeding mums as well, and dads. We look at, well, not dads breastfeeding, obviously, but
mums. Key supports.
Well, actually, these days it can happen. Mm. Looking at diet, because that's a major factor. So we go through the diet, whether it's ingredients from formula as well, choice of formula, how much is being fed, is it appropriate to the baby's digestive system? Yeah, so the level of change around depends on how long it takes to heal, depends on how the situation of a baby, obviously, you know, and yeah. how affected the digestive system has been for how long.
And I guess similar to us as adults, we'll all heal, we'll all respond in a really individual timescale in a really different way. And they're just small versions of us. So I guess that's kind of similar, right?
Yeah, well, similar, yes, to some degree, small versions of us. But that's another thing I'd love to see change, Pip, is especially in the solids field, you know, when we go into weaning our children, because I work from newborn to two-year-olds, mm-hmm. From the digestive perspective. And when we move into that whole, let's treat them like mini adults, well, actually, their digestive system operates completely different to ours for the first 2 years of life. After that, they then become, let's treat them like mini adults to a certain degree. Before that, that's the piece of the puzzle that really needs to change, is we need to understand how they are developing. And we know very little comparatively, probably, to what we know as adults, just because of how research is, obviously. But what we do know can transform, and in my opinion, should transform the way we are, you know, dealing with our children and caring, the care practices that we currently offer.
My goodness. And I'm sure any parents,
some of them anyway,
currently with, yeah, any parents who are currently navigating a colic journey will absolutely echo what your vision is and your mission. In terms of things that you would like to see change, Philippa, you mentioned a couple already, but in terms of healing, but ideally, I know your mission is preventative. What kind of main things would you like to see change if you had that magic wand?
Oh, gosh, I'd have like 10 magic wands. I would love prenatally, obviously, for more extensive education to be happening in the prenatal stage, so we can we have our parents able to calm their babies, understand what's happening, and actually give them the solutions. You know, why do we hold it? There are a number of solutions that I have that I willingly let go of, because I don't believe that just because I'm a health professional, you have to come to me and I'm going to retain all of those. I believe there's a lot of things that we could certainly be teaching our parents, you know, things like, I don't know, what you do with a hernia if your child starts to have a hernia at home. You know, it doesn't need a doctor. In fact, most babies won't get anything done at the doctors for a hernia, but you can help it at home. So there's lots there. I'd love more preventative education to be uplifted for sure. I would love all parents, another one would be to be taught about their child's six wind cues and how to burp their baby appropriately, which I have a method called Nature's Wind Sequence. It's a 10-step method on how to release that air from the stomach so that you stop excess retention of air going through the intestines and bowel, which causes a lot of these issues. So it's the number one cause of digestive overload, that overfeeding, tongue and lip ties, and unbalanced enzymes within the body and hormones. That being taught, and I teach that through my Burping and Gas Masterclass, which is available online. You can actually watch it being done. And then another one that is just a little side one is I'd love parents to stop holding their baby upright for 30 minutes after a feed, please. It doesn't work. In fact, it makes matters worse. Yes, I know our babies can reflux, particularly because the wind is stuck underneath that milk and they've got a lot of air in there because they're not burping enough. and it needs to come out. But holding our babies upright means they're not releasing that air, which means they're retaining more air. So, and I know that every parent gets told to do that. It's a widely known thing, but it really doesn't help them. So, yeah. Yeah.
All parents.
And probably one other is, oh, yes, all parents sitting there with their baby going, I can't move. Goodness. Don't move.
I've got half an hour on the clock when I could be sleeping.
Yes. And yet we should be, ideally, we would be proactive in using different positions and calming methods to release that air, which is what I teach, you know, from the burping perspective. And then, of course, I would love, as standard, all babies to be checked for tongue and lip tie at birth by a pediatric dentist who is professionally trained to do that.
Yeah, I think that's definitely a topic that lots of mums that I see and I support would also love a big improvement on. I think it's a real lacking area, isn't it? I think for sure that tongue and lip tie, and we see it so much in the UK for sure. So much. Philippa, you have so much wisdom and obviously a lot of passion in this topic. If people want to come and find out more about what you offer and how you can support them and their baby, where can they find you?
So the website is babyqs.com. You can follow me on Instagram. It's babyqs underscore nurture with nature. And I'm on Facebook as well. I'm also starting this postnatal evolution. So there's four campaigns within that. And you can find that on the babyqs through the babyqs.com website. And the four campaigns are a prenatal campaign, once again towards that education, colic and reflux campaign, so coming back into the understanding of digestive overload, a burping campaign, whoever thought we would need one, but we do, and then a solids campaign, so really looking at nutritional aspect, because I'm also qualified within that too, so and harmonizing comfort for our babies through that.
Oh, amazing. So interesting. I am really excited to see how it all unfolds and how these campaigns can help the world and solve so many parents and babies' problems. Before I let you go, Philippa, could you leave us with three top tips for parents on the topic of this?
Seek help early.
Nice.
You know, seek help early. Don't question yourself. And if you don't, tip number two, if you don't get the help you need from the person you go to see, or it doesn't make sense to you, or your gut says, no, there's got to be more, or they give you a medication for a prescription, go home, have a look at the side effects of that medication and then make your decision. Okay. Be informed. Being informed is being the best advocate that you can be for your child. And what would be another tip? It's probably just coming back to going, because tongue and lip ties aren't a standard practice, if you think, and I've got a tongue and lip tie booklet, I've got quite a few booklets available on my website about different topics like medication during inductions and cesareans. But with it not being standard practice to get a tongue and lip tie checked, if you are having feeding issues, like latching on issues, perhaps you feel that baby's drinking the bottle a bit irregular, if you're bottle feeding, then go and see a pediatric dentist. No offense to lactation consultants, some of them are not trained in tongue and lip ties. It really is a choice for us health professionals to either train in that or not, whereas a pediatric dentist gets trained on it, and he not only sees it from a feeding perspective, he sees it from the teeth development perspective, which you get the whole picture. And they're the ones that do the procedure. So, you know, you might as well go to the right professional.
That's so interesting. Philippa, thank you so much for your time. I could pick your brains for the entire of my evening and your morning on this topic. But thank you so much. And if you are struggling with these symptoms in your baby, then of course head over to BabyQs to find out what Philippa has to offer. Thank you very much and have a lovely rest of your day.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, Pip. You too.
Before you head off, I just need to tell you something. 68% of you who listen to my podcast have not hit the subscribe button. So can you do me a favor? If you have ever enjoyed listening, and hit subscribe now. It makes a huge difference and helps me to keep bringing you episodes. The bigger the podcast, the bigger the guests, and the more women we can reach and help. Thank you for subscribing, and I look forward to chatting again soon.
Hi, my name is Kay Adams, and to be honest, I'm not so good with the aging process, so I enlisted my old chum, the filter-free Cara McKenzie, to advise.
Could you imagine being a porn star? The room would need to be really hot for me to strip off.
To be honest, she's not much help, but she is rather amusing. And along with some great guests, Joe Brand, Andy Oliver, Anton Dubek, Ruth Langsford, and Craig Revel Horwood, darling, we are learning how to be 60. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.